The Liberals unveiled a $40 billion deficit and $115 billion in new spending over the next 5 years with no plans to balance the budget. A GTA elementary school is selling pride-themed swag in its school spirit shop.
The Parti Québécois is calling for another referendum on Quebec independence.
A new study reveals over 1 in 4 deaths in young adults are linked to opioids. Hello Canada, it's Wednesday, April 17th, and this is the True North Daily Brief. I'm Cosmin Jirja.
And I'm Lindsay Shepherd.
We've got you covered with all the news you need to know. Let's discuss the top stories of the day and the True North exclusives you won't hear anywhere else. The Liberal government's 2024 federal budget proposes a sweeping $111.2 billion in new spending over the next 5 years, lacking any strategy to balance the budget. Finance Minister Chrystia Freeland unveiled the Liberals' 2024 budget in the House of Commons on Tuesday afternoon. Many of the key components of this year's budget had already been announced leading up to Tuesday. Such announcements included a projected $37 billion in new spending and loans, with a significant portion tied to addressing the housing shortage. Several promises made leading up to the budget included initiatives to help renters improve their credit scores, modifications to savings plans and amortization rules, and billions of dollars in incentives designed to simulate more home construction. The federal government also announced a national lunch program for schools, billions for childcare access, additional defense spending, while still short of NATO's target, and a new youth mental health fund. Freeland pledged before the budget's announcement that the deficit would not increase past its current level of minus $40.1 billion. The deficit increased from $35.3 billion to $40 billion between last year and this year. The budget shows that the deficit will not be increased beyond its current level, but the federal debt as a percentage of GDP will increase from 42.4 to 42.7%. Between 2023, 2024, and 2024-2025, decreasing slightly every year thereafter. So I looked at this deficit and the first thing I immediately noticed was that it's nothing special. There's no major new announcements. As the story mentions, the Liberals have been parading around talking about their dental plan, their plan to address the housing crisis. And all of these statements and announcements were made prior to this federal budget. So Canadians were already aware. Yet, it's still a huge, massive amount of taxpayer money that they're going to dish towards these programs. And this comes at a time when everybody, including economists, including the Bank of Canada, were telling the Liberals to cut back, stop the spending. Don't do this. That was the message that professionals and experts were telling our political leaders. And yet, here we are. What is the rationale for running these high deficits and plunging the Canadian Treasury further into debt?
Well, Cosmin, let's remember that ever since the Liberals were elected in 2015, they've been running a budgetary deficit every single year. And because of all of this previous borrowing, Ottawa is paying $54 billion a year in debt charges alone. But if we look at this year's deficit in particular, I'm sure on some level the Liberals are operating with the understanding that it won't be their mess to clean up. And even though the CBC and other legacy media outlets got more money in this budget, it was the CBC that pointed out the government will spend more on servicing its debt than on healthcare this year.
Colonel J.E. Farewell Public School in Whitby, Ontario, has an inventory of shirts and sweaters showing the school name in the colors of the Progressive Pride flag. The flag includes white, pink, and blue representing trans-identifying people. The brown and black stripes are supposed to portray LGBT people of color, with a purple circle on a yellow background representing intersex people. School spokesperson told True North in an email, quote, "Some of the options reflect the varied identities within the school community. By fostering an environment where diversity is celebrated, all students can express themselves authentically and thrive academically and socially." When asked how the school came to the conclusion that allowing children to wear pride-themed apparel enables the students to thrive academically and socially, the spokesperson didn't respond. Chanel Fall, former teacher, has made it her duty to expose wokeism in Canadian schools. In an interview with True North, Fall said the swag isn't just about inclusivity and school spirit. She said, quote, "I think we have to be honest about what this flag represents, and that is an ideology that's totalitarian in nature and doesn't accept the viewpoints that challenge what it's proposing. The symbol that they're using for inclusion actually represents intolerance and does not include everyone." I think Fall is correct in her assumption that this is actually an expression of ideology and not just inclusion. And it's funny that the school came up with this idea that this will somehow help students thrive in academia, when we know for a fact that math scores are going down, literacy levels aren't doing great at public schools, and students are being taught ideological, political nonsense instead of getting the life skills they will need to succeed as adults.
Well, for listeners who don't know, Cosmin and I actually have two children and we're married, and our son is going to be entering kindergarten in September. And I think we're going to understand how deep all this really goes once our first child will be in public school. And I did do a brief visit of the elementary, you know, public school that he'll be entering later this year, and I unfortunately did spot a Pride Progress flag on one of the classrooms, so hopefully that won't be his. But I think people are coming to the understanding that teaching, education is an ideological profession, even in the elementary years, and, you know, in the K-12 system. And I think of Jim McMurtry, who was a teacher in the Abbotsford School District in British Columbia, who was persecuted because he taught his students correctly that the 215 narrative about the supposed 215 unmarked graves on residential school grounds of First Nations children, he was teaching his students to be skeptical of that because nothing had been found. And to this day, nothing has been found. It's almost the 3-year anniversary of when the Tkamloops Nation announced that they had apparently found 215 graves full of remains of children. So he was fired for that. And I think he's still being persecuted and all that to this day. So even while a lot of people might have a passion for education and they might want to see themselves in that teaching role, they know that this K-12 system, and as we know, colleges and universities as well, are not places where free thought is welcome. And you're actually not welcome to teach critical thinking to your students. Quebec's Separatist Party is calling for a third independence referendum. Parti Québécois leader Paul Saint-Pierre Plamondon told his supporters that should his party win the next provincial election, it would call for another referendum on Quebec's future in Confederation. Saint-Pierre Plamondon made the pledge at the PQ's National Council meeting, where he presented a mock-up of what a national budget could look like for an independent Quebec government. The PQ leader claimed his mock budget would save Quebec taxpayers several billions of dollars through the elimination of duplicate public agencies. However, the PQ's hypothetical budget did not include spending for the development of Quebec's own national military, nor did it consider Quebec shifting to its own national currency. Saint-Pierre Plamondon said that Prime Minister Justin Trudeau is seeking to crush Quebec, pointing to Trudeau's top-down housing policies, and the refusal of federal MPs to abandon pledging an oath to the King upon being sworn in. Under previous PQ governments, Quebec has held two referenda on separating from Canada. The 1980 referendum was shot down handedly, with around 60% of Quebecers voting against it, though the province came significantly closer in the 1995 referendum, coming within one percentage point. Since then, Quebecers had largely abandoned hopes of becoming their own country, though popularity for the idea has been picking up steam in recent years. According to a Léger poll, 36% of Quebec residents support their province separating from Canada, while 53% said they were opposed. Cosmin, it's not only Quebec that's upset with Trudeau. There's also Alberta and Saskatchewan that are fed up over the carbon tax. Has the Trudeau government become a threat to national unity?
Well, look, I think it's obvious that Trudeau has done a lot of damage in multiple ways to Canada and the Canadian people, but in a way, people are actually more united, and they are united against the Prime Minister and the government and the Liberal cabinet. We've seen this with the carbon tax. Seven of Canada's premiers have called on Justin Trudeau to drop the tax. So I think this is more united than they've ever been before. Now, I take issue with some of the comments made here because this individual who's talking about the referendum, he says that the Prime Minister is seeking to crush Quebec. But in reality, the Liberals have always shown a preference for Quebec. Quebec seems to get its way in a lot of different areas with regards to immigration, economy, and different Liberal policies. So I don't really see that as being true or a justification for a referendum. But things like the immigration issue, I believe that should be a justification for a referendum, but perhaps not on independence. Opioid deaths are proving to be one of the leading killers for young adults in Canada. Recent study by the Canadian Medical Association Journal found well over a quarter of deaths among Canadians aged 20 to 39 are linked to opioids. Not only were about 29% of deaths observed across nine provinces and territories opioid-related, the number of opioid-related deaths doubled between 2019 and 2021. The study showed that during the COVID-19 lockdowns, the already existing opioid crisis worsened. Before the government response to the pandemic, the number of accidental opioid-related deaths across Canada rose from 2,470 in 2016 to 3,447 in 2019. The study found that both prescription and unregulated opioids contributed to the toxicity deaths. But between 2020 and early 2023, fentanyl from the unregulated drug supply accounted for more than 80% of opioid deaths. Seems like there's been so little done to offer actual solutions to the opioid crisis, and it's quite tragic, actually. And we've had safe supply for quite some time, at least here in British Columbia, and honestly, things have gotten worse. The statistics that come out from the coroner are always even worse than the year prior. So what are some things governments can do to actually address this crisis instead of just offering free drugs to these addicts?
In Alberta, we do have Daniel Smith, who last year discussed the Compassionate Intervention Act, and this will allow a family member, doctor, or police officer to make a petition to family court for a treatment order when someone is a danger to themselves or others. So under this treatment order, the person would be required to engage in treatment for their addiction and drug use to save their life and protect the safety of the community. I think this is exactly what we need in all parts of Canada. Yesterday, I was speaking to the founder of Addiction Treatment Facility, and he was talking to me about how the opioid crisis is still ongoing because it's being encouraged by political leaders. Simple as that. And this person was BC-based. We also talked about how the BC NDP announced that every hospital in the province is going to have a dedicated drug use area so that addicts can use meth, use crack, while they're at the hospital. They'll have their own special zone to do that. You know, the man I was talking to earlier who runs the treatment facility, he told me this is ridiculous. I've often found that people who actually have experience with addiction or are recovering addicts or current addicts themselves, still struggling with it, they all seem to agree that safe supply is not the way to go.
That's it for today, folks. Make sure to check in at www.tnc.news throughout the day for all the news you need to know. Thanks for tuning in. Don't forget to share our work with your friends and neighbors. And if able, please consider supporting independent media at donate.tnc.news.